citizen. Thank you, State of Texas, for this honorable service.
Thank you. Be seated. I've asked Justice Heck to talk today. He's up to it.
The court has three matters on its submission docket this morning. In the order that they will be presented, they are cause number 1774, the J. M. Davidson Incorporated versus Chelsea J. Webster from San Patricio County and the 13th Court of Appeals. 0271, N. Ray Lee M. Bass and others, a petition for writ of mandamus. And 02179, 6 RMA Partners versus Sibley from Jefferson County and the 9th District Court of Appeals. The court is allotted 20 minutes in each case for argument, and we'll take a brief break between each of the arguments and complete them before the lunch recess. The tape is being made of the arguments and is available to you from the clerk's office for a nominal fee. The court is ready to hear arguments. We're also glad to have Justice-elect Dale Wainwright in the audience this morning, and he will participate in the decisions in these cases. The court is ready to hear argument in 1774 J. M. Davidson Incorporated against Webster.
May it please the court. Petitioner J. M. Davidson is seeking to enforce an arbitration agreement. It's a claim to null arbitration agreement after suit was filed by Chelsea Webster alleging a violation of the Texas Labor Code, a workers' compensation retaliation claim. J. M. Davidson moved to compel arbitration. The trial court denied that motion. The appeal was taken to the 13th Court of Appeals. The 13th Court of Appeals affirmed with Justice Castillo dissenting. And from that decision, we appeal and are here today. There has never been any dispute that there is an arbitration agreement and that the claims in the underlying lawsuit are subject to that arbitration agreement.
Let me ask you this. If Davidson were, for some reason, to be the plaintiff in the case against an employee, could it go to court and could the employee compel arbitration?
Justice O'Neill, certainly the employee could compel arbitration. And the arbitration,
what in the record demonstrates that?
Well, the agreement itself states that both Webster and J. M. Davidson mutually agree in contract that any and all claims, disputes or controversies, shall be exclusively and finally settled by binding arbitration.
But Davidson can terminate that at any time at its own option, couldn't it? So couldn't it then just say, let's say Davidson sued the employee in court, employee tried to compel arbitration, couldn't Davidson say, under the terms of this agreement, don't want to anymore, I revoke my agreement?
Justice O'Neill, I would no. If J. M. Davidson said, we are changing our policy and we no longer have an arbitration agreement, and the claim arose after that change has been made.
Does it say that in the agreement?
The agreement simply states that, as this court held in Hathaway versus General Mills, that the employer has a right to change the policy. And in fact, this court recently held in N. Ray Halliburton that an employee of Halliburton who had been working for 30 years, that all that was required was that the employee be given notice and the employee keep working.
But in that case, the employee could, if the claim arose the company could not get out of arbitration. And it strikes me under this agreement, it says that the company reserves the right to unilaterally abolish any personnel policy without prior notice. So it strikes me that under this broad language, the company could unilaterally decide that it didn't want to arbitrate at any time.
I think that if they decided that they no longer wanted to have that policy, they could make that decision. And from that point forward, but the it doesn't say that they're reserving the right to not apply arbitration to events that happened while the arbitration agreement was in place.
But your position is that once a claim has arisen, they have to they have to play by whatever rules are in effect at the time.
Yes, Justice Heck, that is exactly what our position is. And just as it was with the plaintiff and Henry Halliburton, first there was one set of rules. There was no arbitration agreement. The company said arbitration agreement, this arbitration agreement is going to apply. And in fact, they did not require him to sign, the plaintiff and Henry Albert to sign an agreement. They simply said, we're imposing this arbitration agreement, this program, and after that was imposed. Now,
Dick, let me ask you a question, Mr. Wesley. Assume that there's a dispute arises. Assume that a claim is made, and assume that Davison unilaterally exercises its right to do away with arbitration and says it will not arbitrate this claim. What about the agreements of the parties could Webster rely on to support a claim in the trial court that it needed to be arbitrated? What theory or document could Webster rely on to say that Davison could not unilaterally deal with arbitration once they are aware of a claim?
I think that if your question is, the claim arose before the arbitration agreement was modified or abolished.
Well, let's just say that that Davison was aware of a claim. What could Webster rely on if Davison refused to arbitrate it? What could they rely on to say that Davison could not unilaterally choose to do away with arbitration after it had notice of the claim?
Well, once they had notice of the claim, then under all that Davison, I mean Webster, all that Webster would be required to rely on would be the agreement, arbitration agreement, and this court's holdings, and Henry Halliburton and Hathaway versus General Mills. Hathaway versus General Mills, the change by Davison would not be in effect until the employee was given notice of that change.
Do you think there would be a problem with the enforceability of the agreement if the employer could change it retroactively?
Under Hathaway, an employer potentially could change it retroactively if the employee agreed to that change by simply remaining employed. So if you take a situation where an employee, for example, had left the employment, then the only way that it could be retroactive is, for whatever reason, the employee ratified that in contract. But under Hathaway, an employee could be retroactive if the company said, said, not only are we abolishing the arbitration agreement, but we're also not going to recognize it for any events that arose in the past. And that would be binding on the employee if the employee continued work.
Well, it seems to me like you're conflating events that lead to contract formation versus the substance of the contract itself. Halliburton, you're talking about the acceptance piece and all that, but I think what we're concentrating on is an enforceable contract substantively because it lacks mutuality.
I guess to answer that question, I would go back to the previous question and say, there certainly would be mutuality. It would not be the employer's prerogative to say retroactively we're not going to apply the arbitration agreement. The employee would have to agree to that change, just as with any other contract. If you're going to modify the contract, both parties have to agree. And the employee may agree by simply one very straightforward way would be for the employee simply to remain employed. Obviously, that would be if an employer wanted to make that intention. Obviously, that would have to be very clear.
But it strikes me that you're saying if it were unenforceable for lack of mutuality by its terms, are you saying that as long as the employee accepts a contract that lacks mutuality, it's enforceable?
If you look at, for example, Penn Healthcare, which is, I think, referred to the employer in that case, that none of this is binding on us, only on the employee. If you have that type of situation, does one way of looking at your question is Hathaway and Henry Halliburton really overrule Tennant? And I think there is an argument that it does. But we don't have to reach that here because here both sides are saying, yes, we mutually agree that this applies to both of us.
Ms. Wesley, in Ray Halliburton, there was a claim made that the agreement to arbitrate these claims was unconscionable. Is there any sort of claim here, or what's your...
At this stage, Your Honor, that was raised in the court below. There's nothing in the record reflecting that.
And that's not up here for... That's not being raised up here, argued up here.
That is not.
Okay. Thank you.
Did I answer your question?
Well, I think the premise of your answer is, and I think what we're struggling with is we're trying to find out where in the contract that premise is, and that is that it can't be applied unilaterally, retroactively. And you're presuming it cannot, but it strikes me we're reading that into the contract a bit.
Let me make an analogy, for example, to In re Alamo Lumber Company. That's the fourth part of the field, sir. In In re Alamo Lumber Company, the employer did not say, as we did here, that there's a mutual, that we mutually agree. They simply said, well, we reserve the right to bring an injunction against the employer. And the court in In re Alamo said, well, that presumes then that all other claims by the employer must be arbitrated. Similarly, in this contract, all claims would have to be arbitrated unless and until there was a change in the arbitration agreement, and that change would have to be effectuated in the manner that, and nothing in the contract was contrary to the manner in which you would change the contract as set out in Hathaway versus General Mills or Henry Halliburton. The And notably, if you look at the language that we that is in our contract, it's very similar to the language that the 14th Court of Appeals in California, Inri Jebbia. Inri Jebbia, again, being a case that followed Tenet Healthcare by the same court. So the Tenet Court, the 14th Court of Appeals, enforced arbitration language very similar to the arbitration language that we have in this case. I will reserve the rest of the time.
Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument and respond.
May it please the court. Obviously, I'm here representing Mr. Chelsea Webster, and we are here arguing that the arbitration agreement is not enforceable as a contract. In hearing the arguments of my opposing counsel, Justice O'Neill, you picked up very much on our main argument in this case, and that we have a unilateral reservation by the employer within the agreement to modify, abolish, change the agreement in any way, at any time, without prior notice. We believe that the 13th Court of Appeals was correct, of course, in finding that the agreement lacked mutuality.
Let's assume that this contract was a contract of pay set salary. It was the company policy that we'll pay you $2,000 a month. And then the agreement had the same sentence. The company reserves the right to unilaterally abolish or modify any personnel policy without prior notice. Could they unilaterally retroactively lower the salary after?
No, Your Honor, that did not occur in this case. Incidentally,
I'm saying, would that be a reasonable construction of the contract?
Of our contract?
No, I'll give you the hypothetical. Let's assume that you had a contract that says it's company policy to pay an employee at your level $2,000 a month. Your employee works May, June, July, most of September, October. The company comes in and says, we're going to unilaterally, retroactively abolish that policy and lower your salary to $1,500 a month. Would be a reasonable construction of this language. The company reserves the right to unilaterally abolish or modify any personnel policy without prior notice to permit them to retroactively lower the salary. Would that be a reasonable construction of the contract?
I think that would, Your Honor. We are talking about employment. However, in that instance, we have notice given to an employee of the change is occurring at the time it occurs, according to your scenario.
No, you worked. They said, well, we paid you $2,000, we're going to retroactively lower.
Oh, I missed the retroactive.
Yes, retroactively.
Your Honor, I would argue that...
we agreed to pay you $2,000 at the end of the month. We're going to lower it to $1,500. Is that a reasonable construction of this contract to let them do that?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I don't think that's a reasonable argument because you have terms that are set. Although the contract may not have those set terms, you have a consideration and a service already provided by an employee under those terms, and then you have a retroactively change. You have a devaluation without notice of services already rendered.
Then how can you retroactively change the right to arbitrate?
That's a good question, Your Honor. Under
this language, wouldn't it be the same result?
Yes, sir, I think it would be.
So you can't So under this contract language, you can't retroactively change the right to arbitrate. You can only change it prospectively.
I would agree with that, Your Honor. And speaking of that, there is...
Well, if you agree with that, then if it is prospective only, and I think it's fair to say the agreement's silent on that, but if it were prospective only, then your opposing counsel's argument that if the claim arose before the prospective change, the company would be bound by this agreement.
And the company would be bound by?
The arbitration agreement. It would no longer be... I think the retroactivity is the difficulty with the unilateral piece. If this contract does apply only prospectively, then if an injury arose before the policy was changed, then the company would be bound by its agreement to arbitrate.
That's a good question, Your Honor. The case law, Your Honor, seems to indicate that, in fact, I found a case that if there is a change in the terms of the employment we discussed, and there's notice given at that time, it's okay for the new new agreements to be enforced. There was a case, it's not necessarily factually similar, but I found a case called Threadgill versus Farmers, where there was a contractual relationship between employment of insurance agent and an insurer, and they found that, hey, if the agreement has within it language that we may modify this later, and there's a bargaining for that possible change at a later date, prospectively, it would be effective. And in our case, though, Your Honor, we have no discussion whatsoever about retroactive or prospective implications.
So I guess your argument then depends upon whether it can be applied retroactively. Because I think you just said if it did, if it only applied prospectively, if it said in the contract that the company could unilaterally change prospectively only, then there wouldn't be a problem here, didn't you, Alan?
I agree with that, Your Honor.
Well, but you also said this doesn't apply retroactively. So what, does it or not?
Well, Your Honor, our whole argument in this case, basically the case law starts out with a two-pronged test on whether you have a valid agreement. And our whole argument here is that the case fails on the first prong, is there a valid agreement?
I understand the argument. And my question to you is, does this agreement allow the employer to decide not to arbitrate a claim that has already arisen?
By its language, it appears to allow that. We are saying, though, by that very instance, that causes the contractual relationship to fail.
So under my example, are you changing your answer? They could retroactively change the salary.
I didn't mean to change my answer, Your Honor. Maybe that I didn't really understand it. I may have been somewhat inconsistent in my statements. I did want to point out to the court, there are contractual cases that are not in our briefing that talk about when a party doesn't reserve the right to cancel at any time without notice is an illusory promise. Therefore, there's no effectual contractual relationship. Those cases are Basic versus Maritime Association. It can be found in 134, Fed 3rd, 283. Another case on that regard is Avila versus Gonzalez. Found at 934 Southwest 2nd, 237. Again, those are not employment-related factual scenarios.
Ms. Nielsen, very succinctly, how do you distinguish this case from Halliburton?
Your Honor, in Halliburton, I believe we had agreements in that case factually where there was a payment or a membership fee paid, a monetary consideration paid. And in this case, we do not have that. We have a continuing just employment, working with the employer. And I would distinguish it in that regard. I also wanted to distinguish the reliance of the Davidson party on the Alamo case. The Alamo case indicates that they acknowledge they're somewhat going against the tenant health care findings. But I wanted to note that within the Alamo case, there was language specifically that the arbitration provision was not binding on the employer, Alamo. And in this case, we have that as well. And in that case, they specifically, though, set out that they would not be bound to be allowed to take judicial action as opposed to our case. And we feel that's a distinguishing note as well. I also want to point out the court a point in that case that bothered me that may come rise in their minds. There's a discussion on page 581 of that decision where the court talks about a illusory promise can form a unilateral contract and that illusory promise can serve as an offer which the promisor can accept by performance. And what I want to point out to this court is we do not have the performance in this matter. There may be a unilateral offer out there, but there has not been an acceptance by Party Webster that I represent. He obviously took no steps towards effectuating the offer out there that he could possibly ratify to go towards arbitration. In our case, we filed a lawsuit instead.
Now, are you saying that this is a unilateral contract?
I'm not saying it's a unilateral contract. I'm saying in case the justices decide to review that case, note that point. I wanted to make that counterpoint while I was here in front of the court, as it's not contained in our name of our briefing.
Well, which is it? You're saying it's not a contract, obviously.
Yes, sir.
But you're saying that there's no promise for a promise.
That's true.
And there's no
and there's
performance.
No performance.
And there's no performance for a promise.
That's correct, Your Honor. So I'm saying either mutuality doesn't exist, nor does a unilateral contract exist.
Well, where does it say in the agreement that they will not apply this, or that it will be applied prospectively, or will not be?
Your Honor, there is no mention of prospective or retrospective in the agreement.
All right, so do we just assume in every unilateral contract that our bilateral contract, that if it's silent, basically it doesn't apply to retroactive, or would not apply retroactively?
Well, I think we have to decide that, Your Honor, because since there's a lack of mutuality, and if one party reserves to do whatever they want, if they decide to make a change, there should be some type of notice given. And this agreement specifically indicates that they can unilaterally abolish any personnel policy without prior notice.
I guess the point is, let's say the employee did some negligent act and burned, the building down.
Okay.
And the company would then have a cause of action against the employee for negligence, let's say. And this agreement covers tort and all sorts of other things. If the company then sued the employee, and the employee said, I want this claim arbitrated, are you saying that the company could then refuse arbitration by abolishing this agreement? Or are you saying that the company would be compelled to arbitrate by the term of this agreement? Which one is it?
I'm saying, Your Honor, that the employer would have the option to abolish and not arbitrate. The language of the agreement gives the complete option of not abiding by the agreement to the employer only. That's all I have, Your Honor. Thank you.
If I may, I would like to make a clarification on whether a change could be made that would be retroactive to this agreement or to any agreement. If the parties agree that a change is to be retroactive, for example, if an employee has earned a bonus and it's clear what that bonus is, and the employer is in desperate financial straits, and the employer goes to the employee and says, look, going forward, we want to change this. Will you agree to it? And we don't want to pay you this big bonus that we had previously promised. And then if you sued us, you could get that bonus. But going forward, we wanted to modify this. We don't want to pay you that. Will you agree? And the employee agrees. Yes, then there can be a retroactive change to a contract.
Let me ask you, in my example, Davidson sues, the employee wants to compel arbitration, and then you're saying you would have an option at that point, the employer would. You could say, we're going to abolish our agreement to arbitrate, and if you stay employed, then you're ratifying that agreement. By staying employed.
Well,
but you have the right to say we don't have to arbitrate because the contract says we've abolished. Is that what you're saying?
Justice Jefferson, in your situation or that hypothetical, let's say that the employer brought the suit against the employee. The employee moved to arbitrate. And in the meantime, the employer said, well, I would rather stay in court. I don't want to go to arbitration. And the question then is, in what way can that agreement be
made? I'm asking, but at that point I'm asking, can the employer, looking at this contract, say, we can, yes, there's arbitration initially when we both signed it, but we retain the right to revise the agreement at any time, and so based on the contract, we're refusing to arbitrate, and then leave it up to the employee either to remain employed and abide by that new term of the contract, or...
Well,
Could they do that? I'm not sure that that's a settled issue, frankly. Does this contract give them the right to do that? This contract doesn't give them, the answer is no. This contract doesn't give them any rights greater than what this court held in Hathaway. Hey, I can change policies in the future. Now, I'm not aware that this court or any court has addressed the question of what does that mean under Hathaway? In your scenario, in your hypothetical, does that mean, as a matter of contract construction, that we can do this retroactively? I would argue that, in fact, the parties do have the ability to make that retroactive change, but whether the parties have that right, I don't believe it is. It is not something that Davidson was reserving here. Davidson was not asking for more or stating that he had more power to unilaterally change a contract than what this court held that it did in Hathaway versus General Mills, and subsequently this court said that it had the right to do in Ray Halbert.
Let me ask you, where's the consideration in this contract?
It is a mutual agreement to arbitrate. In a whole string of cases, but in Ray Alamo and in Ray Jebbia, both courts have consistently held that a mutual agreement to waive the right to go to trial is consideration.
So it's not a unilateral contract where you're saying you keep working here, every day, you accept every day, and we'll arbitrate.
No, it's very specifically a mutual agreement. It states by its terms that it's a mutual agreement that they would arbitrate. And in addition, the contract simply states that policies can be changed, including this policy. And without prior notice, but it doesn't say without notice. It doesn't say, oh, we're ignoring Hathaway. It doesn't say we have more rights than what the Supreme Court said we had in Hathaway. It's simply saying we can change policies, including this policy.
And you can basically change it without an agreement, sounds like.
Well, in N. Ray Halliburton and in Hathaway versus General Mills, and Hathaway is probably both of them are very clear on what is required to get the employee's agreement.
But didn't in Halliburton they gave them 10 days worth of notice?
I believe that's correct.
And then it specifically said that the contract remained. Basically said that you could enforce the rights you had at the time of the before it was changed. That is.
Yes. Yes.
And in this one, it doesn't say that, does it?
This is very, very simple.
So this term would have to be applied.
Exactly. This one just simply says we mutually agree we're going to arbitrate. If you go to Henry Halliburton, there's all sorts of terms that are spelled out. None of those terms are spelled out in this one. This is a very, very simple arbitration.
So it's implied that you have a vested right once your claim arises to basically enforce that arbitration.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Any other questions? That concludes the argument in the first case. Thank you, counsel. Hope to have a great recess.